Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today, we start our show with an important health alert about a measles outbreak that includes 10 cases in 5 local communities. Here in East County, those infected visited many public places where you could have been exposed to measles if you went to a supermarket, shopping mall, gym, pharmacy, or urgent care center, and a public building in San Diego as well. We'll have details on exactly where and when these exposures occurred. Hear about a hack of the U.S. military's Central Command website where ISIS propaganda and a threat to American soldiers was posted. And then on our Capitol Report, we'll tell you about a House vote seeking to block immigration reforms. Learn about a sexually violent predator released in an East County community, and about the La Mesa City Council's action on free parking in its downtown village. From Public News Service, we'll have information on a rise in poisonings linked to electronic cigarettes. Plus, hear about a sale of school sites by San Diego Unified School District, including the site of an infamous school shooting. Our newsmaker interviews today are with Tom Wood and Eddie B. Cooper, Jr. from the American Postal Workers Union Local right here in San Diego. We'll be talking about deep cuts to the Postal Service and how that could impact your mail service at your home, your community, or your business. And you'll also hear about a boycott of Staples. In addition, we'll have news about a strike by mental health care workers at Kaiser Permanente Hospital, workers who say that patient safety is being put at risk by long scheduling delays. And then on Destination East County, you can hear about the hottest festivals and events in East County coming up, from a Martin Luther King Jr. birthday concert to a photo tour in the Anzabrego Desert to a circus coming to town. We'll have all these stories and more, so stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. This is Miriam Raftery with a very important health alert. 10 cases of measles have been confirmed in San Diego County, including 9 here in East County. All of them are linked to exposures at Disneyland or with people who visited Disneyland on December 18th, so far. However, the latest patients visited numerous public places in our region while they were contagious before they were diagnosed. Public exposures occurred in Alpine, El Cajon, La Mesa, Julian, and San Diego. If you visited any of these places, you may have been exposed to measles. The Rite Aid Pharmacy in Alpine on January 13th, Sharp Reese Steele's Urgent Care Clinic near Grossmont Hospital in La Mesa on January 3rd and again on January 14th, Trader Joe's Market in La Mesa on January 12th, Parkway Plaza Shopping Mall in El Cajon on December 29th, especially if you visited the Carousel, Game Step, or Sunglasses Hut. The CVS Pharmacy on Fletcher Parkway in El Cajon on January 14th. Also in El Cajon, the Vaughn's Market on Fletcher Parkway on January 14th. And in San Diego, the City of San Diego's Operations Building on First Avenue on January 12th. Up in Julian, on January 9th, the Absolute Fitness Center or the Julian Fitness Center. For details about the exact time of day when the exposures occurred at these locations, you can visit www.sdiz.org. Anyone who's at any of the locations during those dates and times should watch for symptoms and contact their healthcare provider by telephone first if they show any signs of the disease, advises Dr. Wilma Wooten, the county's public health officer. Measles is highly contagious and spreads easily through coughing, sneezing, or coming in contact with an infected person. There had not been a single case of measles in the U.S. in many years until recently. Dr. Wooten says the best prevention measure for measles is to get vaccinated. No vaccine is 100% effective, but if you're vaccinated and you acquire measles, the symptoms will be much less severe. Measles can develop 7 to 21 days after exposure. Early symptoms include high fever, cough, runny nose, and red eyes. The distinctive red rash usually appears 3 to 5 days after early symptoms appear, but a person is considered contagious 4 days before the rash appears. The rash starts on the face and head and then proceeds downward and outward to the hands and feet. Everyone born in 1957 or later in the U.S. should have documentation of at least one dose of measles, mumps, and rubella, or MMR, vaccine, or other evidence of immunity to measles. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommends two doses of the vaccine, the first at 12 months of age and the second between ages 4 to 6 years. There is no treatment for measles. Bed rest, fluids, and fever control are recommended. People with complications may need treatment, though, for those complications, which are more common in children younger than 5 years of age and adults 20 years and older. These complications can include diarrhea, ear infection, and pneumonia. Death can occur from severe complications. For more information about measles, other vaccine-preventable diseases, and the shots that protect against them, you can call the county's immunization branch at 866-358-2966 or visit www.sdiz.org.
Threats and propaganda from ISIS appeared on YouTube and Twitter on Monday, sparking alarm from military officials. This is not uncommon behavior from ISIS, but here's the catch. The threats appeared on the accounts of Central Command, or CENTCOM. This action was made possible by a group of hackers known as the Cyber Caliphate, claiming allegiance to ISIS and the Islamic State. The CENTCOM accounts were soon taken down, but not before followers and subscribers on Twitter and YouTube witnessed the string of threats. One of these threats read, "We are in your PCs, in each military base, and with Allah's permission, we are now in CENTCOM." And another saying, "American soldiers, we are coming, watch your back," KUSI reports. The hackers also posted a series of U.S. military documents. However, these documents appear to have already been available online, and military officials state that no classified information was leaked or stolen, UT San Diego reports. The White House has confirmed that the issue is under investigation. The administration is examining and investigating the extent of the incident, according to White House Press Secretary Josh Earnest, UT San Diego reports. Though this is a serious issue, he also states, "There is a pretty significant difference between a large data breach and a hacking of a Twitter account, indicating national security has not been put at risk." ISIS has been waging a propaganda war against the U.S. for most of the year, with graphic images often appearing on YouTube and Twitter accounts sympathetic to their cause. Though ISIS likely cannot perform major hacking operations against the United States government, this could be part of a major cyber warfare campaign. Reporting for KNSJ, this is Hayden Parsley.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Crime Beat report. Gary Snavely, a sexually violent predator, has been released from a state mental hospital on January 12th and is now living on Old Highway 80 in Hukumba Hot Springs. The decision to release Snavely and place him in Hukumba was made by the Department of State Hospitals and the San Diego Superior Court. Sheriff's deputies went door-to-door in Hukumba Hot Springs last week to notify the community about Snavely's placement. He served several years in prison for molesting young girls between the ages of 8 and 12 years old back in the 1980s. He will be required to wear a GPS ankle bracelet for an undetermined amount of time and will be monitored by Liberty Healthcare. California's Megan's Law permits law enforcement agencies to warn the community about sex offenders who frequent the area so that they can protect themselves and their children. To receive email alerts when a sex offender moves in and out of your neighborhood, you can sign up at sandiegocountysexoffenders.com. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is Hayden Parsley with a Capitol Report. The House of Representatives has voted to block funding for immigration reforms ordered by President Barack Obama. The action puts the status of millions of undocumented people who have been allowed to stay in America under that order in limbo. The language to block funding was inserted into a measure to fund the Department of Homeland Security through September. In addition, the House added an amendment to halt the Deferred Action for Children Arrivals program, which stopped deportation for some immigrants who were children when they came to America. Republicans who pushed through the measure claimed that President lacked legal authority for his actions without backing from Congress. Speaker John Boehner, in a floor speech, claimed Obama ignored the Constitution. Other amendments would promote hiring people who are here legally and prioritize deportation of undocumented immigrants who have been convicted of domestic violence or sex crimes. Democratic Representative Luis Gutierrez from Illinois accused Republicans of playing politics with people's lives, adding, "Behold the Republicans' immigration strategy, mass deportation." President Obama has indicated previously that he would veto the bill if it contained ideological provisions. The bill also increases funding for Customs and Border Protection, U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, and the Secret Service, as well as boosting money for cybersecurity, but reduces funds for the Coast Guard and some other programs. The added funds are to boost border surveillance and build more detention facilities for undocumented immigrants, a response to last year's influx of immigrants, mostly minors, from Central America.
Free parking will continue in La Mesa through the end of 2015. The La Mesa City Council voted unanimously for the extension Tuesday night following a 60-day trial period. Merchants in La Mesa's downtown village had asked for the suspension on parking meter fees during the city's $5 million downtown streetscape construction project, which began last July. There are limits to the free parking, however. Meters are marked with two-hour or four-hour limits, and tickets will still be issued to motorists who overstay those time periods. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
The number of calls to poison control centers about electronic cigarette incidents more than doubled last year, according to new data from the American Association of Poison Control Centers. Children under age 6 were the victims in more than half the cases. The rise in calls has the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids calling on the FDA to finalize its proposed rules to regulate products. Campaign spokesman Vince Wilmore says the agency also needs to crack down on marketing and flavors, such as gummy bear and bubble gum.
Given how they're being marketed and given these sweet flavors, it's not surprising that more kids are using e-cigarettes and that they're attracted to nicotine liquids and being poisoned by them.
While there are no federal regulations to restrict the sale of electronic cigarettes and the nicotine liquids, most states, including Maryland, require that purchasers be 18. Wilmore says his group wants the FDA to finalize and strengthen rules by the end of April. Wilmore says the colors and packaging of e-cigarettes also appeal to kids, yet nicotine is highly dangerous, and not only because of potential addiction.
Nicotine is a very toxic substance, and that exposure to even small amounts of nicotine, whether through the skin or through ingestion, can cause vomiting and seizures. And unfortunately, it can even be lethal.
A one-year-old child in New York died last month after swallowing liquid nicotine. Wilmore says the FDA should require childproof packaging, and adults need to keep the devices and supplies out of sight and out of reach of children. For Public News Service, I'm Deborah Smith.
This is Hayden Parsley with a Crime Beat Report. Border Patrol agents arrested a fugitive and convicted sex offender with an outstanding warrant after he confessed to being wanted by authorities during a routine stop of a bus in Pine Valley. The westbound commercial bus approached the Pine Valley Border Patrol checkpoint on I-8 shortly after midnight Tuesday and was referred to secondary inspection. An agent boarded the bus and questioned the passengers about their citizenship. As the agent approached a 55-year-old man, he verified that he was a U.S. citizen, then blurted out to the agent, "I bet I won't leave this bus with all these warrants I got." Based on the man's statement, agents requested that he leave the bus for further questioning. A records check revealed that the passenger, Scott Gauthier, had a criminal history for burglary and assault with attempts to rape as well as drug offenses. He also had an outstanding felony warrant out of Sacramento. A registered sex offender, Gauthier was a subject of a manhunt last year in San Diego County after he violated terms of his release and became a fugitive. Border Patrol agents turned Gauthier over to San Diego County Sheriff's Office for extradition.
This is Leon Thompson with an education report. The San Diego Unified School District's Board of Trustees has voted to sell the former Cleveland Elementary School campus site in San Carlos, where student Brenda Spencer shot and killed the principal and custodian back in 1979, also injuring 8 more, including a police officer in America's first school shooting. Spencer, allegedly an abuse victim, later said she committed the crimes because she wanted to die. She remains in prison and won't be eligible for parole hearing until 2019. The school at Lake Atlan Avenue closed years ago, but has more recently been occupied by the Magnolia Science Academy Charter School, serving middle school students. In addition, the San Diego Unified Trustees voted 4-1 to sell the former Benchley Elementary School site on Princess View Drive in Del Cerro. The property is currently leased to Excelsior Academy. The sale is prompted by the district's desire to close its budget gap short-term until Proposition 30 tax increases kick in. 10 News reports. Newly elected trustee Michael McQuarrie cast the only vote against the sales, stating that he believed the district should look for other revenues before selling off school properties. But trustee John Lee Evans has said the alternatives would have required dismantling many programs.
Music.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center here in El Cajon. Today I have two very special guests, Tom Wood, who is the president of the American Postal Workers Union San Diego Local 197, and Eddie B. Cooper Jr., who is their executive vice president. We're going to be talking about some major cuts in the postal service and the future of the post office itself. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, some of the recent erosion in the Postal Service that people are surprised to learn about is that effective January 5th, we have no more overnight mail delivery across America. They're also closing 82 processing centers, and I understand that even more cuts are proposed on the horizon. Tom, can you tell us what some of those additional cuts might be?
A lot of the cuts are going to be in reducing the number of hours that post offices are open for our customers. Here in like Descanso, Portrero, I know that some of those offices went from like being open 8 hours a day to being open 4 to 6 hours a day. So the Postal Service wants to cut back.
So that's like in half, from 8 hours to 4 hours in Descanso, which is where our station transmits out of.
Right. So they want to cut back the amount of time that people have to go to their post office. And their post offices, there's almost a post office in every little town and hamlet.
Yeah.
In city, in the country. That's a problem as far as we're concerned. If they're successful in being able to close a lot of these big plants, the 82, I think you said,
yeah.
What's to say that they won't continue to close more? We think they're trying to close these to set up the possibility of privatizing the Postal Service.
Right. We're going to talk a lot more about the privatization effort in a few minutes. But another thing we're hearing is that there's a movement in Congress to try to cut delivery down to 5 days a week right now. Some of these guys are working 7 days a week. They're actually delivering packages for Amazon.com and other big companies, right?
Absolutely. And you said it pretty clearly and pretty concisely, is that the Postal Service has said that they want to do just delivery of letters and flats, magazines, newspapers, and parcels. They only want to deliver those 5 days a week. But on the back of all of that, the Postal Service has gotten some huge contracts with Amazon and a lot of other private companies that we are now delivering on Saturdays and Sundays. You'll notice in your community on Sunday, son of a gun, there's a mailman delivering parcels.
They are out there, rain, snow, dark of night, as
exactly.
they say.
Exactly, and there's quite a few of them. Not as many as if you had letter carriers out there delivering letters and everything to every door.
Yeah, it's a tradition that goes all the way back to Benjamin Franklin, who was
Absolutely.
The first postmaster general. Amazing.
Absolutely.
We also have with us today our wonderful intern from High Tech High School who's been helping us research this story, Hayden Parsley. And Hayden has some questions that he would like to ask.
So how did this whole push against the post office really get started?
I think that where it all began was approximately in 2008 when the President George Bush created a bill that would be a Postal Reorganization Act. And we've had several over the last 30, 40 years. But this one was pretty devastating to the Postal Service. It required the Postal Service to pre-fund future retirees for up to 75 years into the future. And that required a $5.5 billion deposit at the beginning of every fiscal year. So the Postal Service was $5.5 billion in the hole.
And that was the only federal agency that was singled out to have to make that huge upfront payment into the retirement medical benefits, correct?
That's correct. In addition to that, it's the only organization or company, even private companies don't even do that. So they picked on the Postal Service, and as a result, that's why the Postal Service always looks like it's losing money hand over fist. And that's not the case. The last 2 or 3 years, we've actually, without that $5.5 billion deposit, we've made somewhere in the neighborhood of about $1.5 billion over the last 2 or 3 years.
So it would be profitable if they didn't make them make these payments that other agencies are not required to make.
Yes. And it's also extremely important for everyone to know that we do not take a dime of tax money. We make all of our money selling stamps. People mail packages mm-hmm. and that sort of thing.
So it's self-sustaining.
It's self-sustaining. So I think we've done a pretty good job. Mm-hmm. I think we've done an excellent job with what we've had to deal with as far as Congress is concerned.
Now, speaking of Congress, San Diego Congressman Daryl Issa, a Republican, has been the driving force, or at least one of the driving forces behind this whole cutting back and privatizing of postal services. He chaired, up until a couple weeks ago, the powerful House Oversight Committee. Mr. Issa isn't here today, but I would like to read a quote from him of his justification behind this. He says, when fully implemented, Postmaster Donahoe's realignment of mail processing centers will save billions of dollars annually. Donahoe and I share the same goal, to modernize the postal service so that it can meet the demands of a changing industry. What would your response be to that argument?
My response would be that it's pretty silly, because what we've taken on now is we've taken on more packages. In fact, I think the increase in packages that we are mailing and delivering now has gone up like somewhere in the neighborhood of 20% over the last year. And we're going to need those particular facilities to keep open to be able to sort those packages so that we can make the distribution to the delivery units, your local post offices. I think it's a silly move to make. In fact, from what we hear, there are several of those offices that they say they're going to close, but they're not going to close altogether. Cool. They're going to only move some of the operations in that particular facility, that plant environment, and move it to another plant. So they're not actually going to be saving any money. They still have the overhead of that particular building, whether or not they own it or they lease it.
Interesting. Now, back in 2013, when this Postal Reform Act was working its way through Congress, interestingly, consumer advocate Ralph Nader wrote a very strongly worded letter to Congressman Issa, and he called the assault on the Postal Service, quote, a congressionally manufactured financial crisis, at a time when the Postal Service had already made huge cuts to services by slashing hundreds of thousands of jobs, cutting back hours, closing processing plants, degrading delivery standards, and raising rates, Nader wrote. He objected to proposed new cuts, including, at that time, a proposal to end door-to-door delivery completely and cut back to five-day delivery, as well as raising postal rates. And Nader concluded, cutting services so drastically and raising rates at the same time is a recipe for disaster in any business, and the U.S. Postal Service in America's history is more than a business. What would you say to that?
Well, I definitely agree that we are more than a business. Our first name is Postal and our last name is Service. And I think that the higher-ups in Washington, D.C. have forgot about what our last name is. They need to come back and deliver the service to our customers that our customers deserve. It's extremely important to many, many people, especially elderly people and infirm people, that rely on medication, they rely on communication from the outside world. There are so many people that still are not in the electronic world as far as computers are concerned and online.
Yeah, there's people that rely on the Postal Service to get medication.
Right.
If you're out in a rural area, you're in Julian or Hecumba and it's snowing and you need your medicine delivered, you don't want to drive to El Cajon or Alpine to go pick it up.
And that's what you would probably do if the Postal Service had its way and wanted to close down post offices.
Now, you have organized a boycott against Staples. Let's talk about that for a minute. The post office, interestingly, sent out a mailer to its customers, the American public, basically, telling them that here's a coupon, you can go to any Staples and save money on your postal services, you know, packages and so forth. Why would the post office encourage people to go to its competitor instead of encouraging them to come in and spend that money in the post office?
It certainly doesn't make any sense. If you were any other company, you certainly wouldn't give a reduction in price to have somebody go purchase your product or somebody else's product at another location or a different company. We're very concerned with the Staples selling our products. We've been into a Staples. We've just tried to test the Staples employees to see whether or not they're doing the same things.
Mm-hmm. And these are mostly low-wage workers, by the way, without
the benefits. $10 an hour.
Not union people.
Right, right. And we found out that the salespeople in Staples don't ask the correct questions as far as the FAA is concerned about what you mail. They don't have a sense of urgency as far as the Postal Service is concerned and their customers. At $10 an hour, they don't really care about the public that much. And the privacy of the mail, the low-wage jobs that they're providing, I think the Postal Service would like to close down some of our offices, and that's a reason why they're trying to do what they're doing. I will tell you that at Staples has they've got more postal units in some of their Staples since the first batch was done, but they've also closed hundreds of stores nationwide. Meaning
that's a problem.
That,
what if you're relying on a private company and all of a sudden one day they go under or they close the Staples in your city?
That's the point that we're trying to make, Mary and Hayden. It's exactly what the situation is you think that you are closing a post office and now you can go to Staples. Now all of a sudden Staples is not going to be able to sell stamps because they're going to close it.
Yeah.
And how many Staples are out here in the backcountry?
None.
The rural America, there aren't any Staples.
So how is the boycott going? I understand you've got some powerful allies that have come on board.
Yes, we have several of our unions that represent millions of people. The American Federation of Teachers is one in particular where they represent teachers.
Well, you get teachers to quit buying all those school supplies. That
absolutely
could be a pretty big impact.
Absolutely. And they've backed our boycott and have recommended to their teachers that they go shop elsewhere for their school supplies. So we applaud them for that.
And what can consumers do if they want to support this?
They can go online to purchase things. I know here in San Diego we have a couple of union Costco's that we actually do some of our purchasing from, and then we go online and have our stuff delivered by the Postal Service.
And presumably letting Staples know why they're not getting your business.
Oh, yeah. We actually called when this first occurred. We contacted our Staples representative and told them why we were not going to be doing business with them anymore. And they're going to find out soon enough that there are a lot of other organizations and companies that will do the same.
So how is it that all these cuts and reforms are affecting your workers and your employees?
I will say this. With the influx of packages and that kind of thing that we've started taking over a large share of from the business from UPS and from FedEx, it's gotten to the point now where a lot of our workers are working 6 days a week and sometimes 7 days a week. And I'm talking about constantly, not just during the holidays. We've gotten so many calls at the union office asking, how can they force us to work 7 days a week? Well, that's one of the rules that we've agreed to with the Postal Service is that they can, but we did not expect them to actually do this on a constant basis. We
Maybe
expected
just holidays
them,
or something.
Exactly, exactly. So it's been pretty terrible for some of these people. A lot of people have quit, and their wages are not what career employees make. They start off at a low wage, and they feel like there's no end in sight.
What would the impacts be in the rural areas? I know a place like Descanso, we've interviewed the postmaster out there before, and he's talked about how people out there rely on their post office to get deliveries of things like ladybugs and baby chickens that are sent through the mail. And I mean, what happens to a place like that if they don't have a post office anymore?
That's exactly true, is that there are so many customers that rely on the Postal Service. I can remember when I worked in the post office 25 years ago, we used to work right next to the special delivery unit, which we don't have special delivery anymore. But you heard chickens, you heard parrots, you heard all kinds of animals coming through the mail. And, of course, as postal employees, we expedited that mail to try and get them to the delivery units and then deliver it to our customers as soon as possible.
There you go. I think Hayden has another question.
How is it that all this privatization might affect things like the cost of shipping, maybe stamps or bulk mail, maybe even packages?
Well, if Congress had their way and some big business had their way, they would like to split the Postal Service up. And what they would do is the big companies like a Pitney Bowes, they would only take the areas where they could make a lot of money, okay, the big cities. They would probably ignore the outlying areas because it's not profitable and it costs so much money. And, you know, houses are not next door to each other. They could be a mile away or something like that. So they would take over the easy part and the money-making part, and the rest of it would fall on a postal service. There would be some postal service, but it wouldn't be the postal service as it is today.
Yeah, sticky with areas nobody wants, so, and maybe they could even go away in the rural areas or charge more, right?
So could this affect things like the cost of stamps?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The cost of stamps, if you were to mail a letter from San Diego going to Julian, instead of it costing what it costs today, it might cost you a third, 33% more because you're not in their system. So it could drive up the cost of postage. I believe that it probably would.
So there's really no limit to what a private corporation could charge for any of these services other than presumably what the market would bear.
That's correct.
And listeners, if you are just tuning in, we're talking today with Tom Wood and Eddie Cooper Jr. with the American Postal Workers Union right here in San Diego about the cuts in postal services and the future of the post office itself. You're listening to the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. What would the impact of these cuts be on businesses who may rely on, you know, bulk mail or other kind of postal services? And also, what would the impact be on the job market?
Well, it certainly is going to slow the mail down, okay? And our customers are not used to that. So slowing the mail down for our customers will always be a problem, and we're concerned with that. We rely on our customers, just like any other big company. We rely on our customers for revenue. And if they're driven away and go to an alternate delivery service, then it's a problem for us.
You know, another thing we didn't even touch on, but that's that, you know, in some neighborhoods, the postal delivery person, the mail carrier, is really kind of an integral part of neighborhood security, too. They know everybody. If Mrs. Jones isn't answering, if something looks wrong, they see a broken window. It's kind of all part of the fabric of the community. Isn't that something that stands to be lost here?
Yes, my brothers and sisters, the letter carriers union, we have a lot of respect for them because they do that, and they do it on a daily basis. They know all of their customers, people who have been on their routes for any number of, even if it's been a year. They get to know their customers. They get to know the elderly customers, the infirmed people, and they keep an eye out whether or not the mail has been picked up, you know, that day, and it's still there the next day. They make some telephone calls. They go back to the office and say there's some problems at that particular address.
Yeah, good for them.
So if the postal industry would to be privatized, who really benefits from it?
Only the large corporations would benefit from it, not the customers, not the public.
And we're talking
the large
about
customers.
Yeah, we're talking about corporations like UPS, FedEx, Staples. Now
Pitney Bowes.
Now, interestingly, we took a look at Congressman Issa's campaign financing, and surprise, surprise, his campaign and his PAC took $22,000 from UPS in the last election cycle, which was his fifth biggest donor. He's also taken money in the past from FedEx. You know, do you think there's an influence there?
Well, certainly the Postal Service can't make any contributions to Congressman Issa's campaign, re-election campaign. Those private companies, UPS and FedEx, can load on as much as they can to influence him.
Yes, it's an interesting question of whose interests are really being represented in
Congress
right now.
Exactly.
Now, the key players are changing. Congressman Issa has been replaced as chair of the Oversight Committee in Congress. He was termed out, and there is a new chairman. What can you tell us about him?
Well, I would say there's a couple of different congressmen and committees that are committee and subcommittees that they've made some changes to.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like Congressman Chavez from Utah is going to be in charge. Of course, the Republicans are in charge, so all of their chairmen are Republicans of all the committees and the subcommittees.
And Eddie, I understand that you have an interesting quote from the new chairman of the House Oversight Committee. Is that right?
The new chairman of the Oversight Committee, yes. What we've heard here recently, that he has gone on record as saying, in his opinion, he feels that the Postal Service should go bankrupt.
Wow.
Believe it or not. Now, who would think that any corporation should go bankrupt? I mean, where's the benefit to that?
Yeah.
We're very concerned about that statement with him just, you know, just being assigned as the chairman of that committee. Mm-hmm. And if that's going to be his opinion and his position, we are very concerned with that.
What about the new postmaster, Donahoe, the one who was really pushing for all of this? We don't know why, but the one who was pushing for all of this has resigned. And effective February 1st, there is a new postmaster coming on. Who is the new postmaster, and what can you tell us about her?
Her name is Megan Brennan, and I think she was the second in charge under the current postmaster, Mr. Donahoe. We don't know a lot about her as of yet, but basically her record has been not too much different than his. So we know that that's going to be some challenges we're going to be facing. Hopefully she will be willing to sit down with the unions and listen to what we have to say and ideas that we have to offer and can make some changes to some of the policies that Donahoe was trying to implement.
So where does the San Diego delegation stand on this? Like, where's our Congress?
Yeah, we have five members of Congress here. Where do they stand on all of this, as well as, for that matter, our two senators?
Well, of course, the two senators, Feinstein and Boxer, they're with us. I don't know that they're really, really tight with us if it push came to shove. And we are kind of disappointed because in the past they have been strong allies of mm-hmm. the postal unions. Of course, Duncan Hunter, he doesn't do much for anybody except for Duncan Hunter. I would say that, of course, Duncan Hunter, we can't count on Duncan Hunter for anything.
How about Susan Davis?
Susan Davis has been real tight with us. She's been real tight with the Postal Service and us mm-hmm. and supports us 110%.
What about Juan Vargas?
Well, you know, as long as he's been congressman, he's been real tight with us. And we stayed in touch even when he was in the state elected office. He was always a big supporter of the Postal Service and their employees mm-hmm. that work there, too.
And what about the newest member of the San Diego Congressional Delegation, Scott Peters?
Scott happens to be my congressman, and we're getting some support from him. But we had some concerns with him. He was not willing to sign on to our pre-funding, trying to get our pre-funding mandate relaxed a little bit. Because he actually was around during, he was a city councilman in San Diego when they had all of their retirement problems begin. And his opponent in the congressional election, Carl DeMaio, just hammered him concerning that. So he was always a little leery of getting behind postal workers as mm-hmm. far as the pre-funding. And I will say this about pre-funding. I think we should pre-fund because we want our postal workers in the future to be able to have a secure retirement. We hear in other public agencies where they don't have enough revenue, they don't have enough yeah. in their retirement.
Would you fund it at the high level that Congress has set, or should the bar be a little bit lower?
Oh, the bar has to be set a little bit lower, or we'll never be able to survive. $5.5 billion every year. If they stretched it out over 20 or 25 years, it would make so much more sense.
If you were the new postmaster, or for that matter, if you were the president of the United States or one of the leaders of Congress, what would you be doing that hasn't been done to try to make the post office more profitable and save the post office instead of privatizing, which you obviously oppose?
I would say that we are probably sort of on the right direction, except we have to stop cutting services. We need to deliver as much mail as we can, even if it's 7 days a week. We have to continue that. If I were the Postmaster General, there are a couple of different things that I would look at mm-hmm. as far as trying to save millions and millions of dollars. And I'll be as brief as I can. When there are vacancies in other parts of the country, they ship executives off from San Diego or any other city to another part of the country, and they pay them a per diem. And I understand that they have to live where they're at, but why don't they just utilize the people that they have in that particular town to be able to get what they want done? It's millions of dollars.
Yeah.
Millions of dollars.
I know I've heard you say before that typically when a company needs to bring in more money, you expand services, you don't right. cut them. What services would you add?
Well, there are a lot of services that we could be providing to our customers, the public. There are so many things that cannot be mailed through the United States Postal Service that can go through FedEx, it can go through UPS and all of the other delivery companies. And it's just not a fair thing. The other thing is that we've been harping on at headquarters for at least a couple of years is that we would like to get into postal banking, where people could come in and do their banking and their savings and their checking accounts with us, okay? And it's not such a far-fetched idea. It's so easy to do. If you think about where the banks are in this country, they're just in the big cities,
yeah,
and small towns. Mount Laguna, I don't know that there's a bank up there. I don't know that there's a bank in Descanso. I don't know. There's banks in El Cajon, but there's a post office in every city and every hamlet and every town in the country.
Good point. If we can see banking outlets in grocery stores, why not in post offices?
Exactly. Exactly.
And you understand have actually lowered postal rates recently for certain services.
Our priority mail, a category of our priority mail, we've actually reduced the cost of that, and we are the lowest priced of all of the companies that deliver that type of mail.
Yeah, and for those who tuned in late, we started the show by talking about the elimination of the overnight mail service, which has happened now. Effective February 5th, you can't send something to the post office overnight anymore, and you've told me that the delays in mail delivery could get even longer.
That's correct. Where it used to be, if you were mailing something from Los Angeles to San Diego, it used to be almost overnight. And it's been even delayed within the last year or two. And now it will be delayed even more.
So it seems like that's almost forcing people who need something there fast, within a day or two or three, to start paying premiums and going to some of these outside services, these private companies that can do that.
We'll certainly give you next day delivery. We have our premium service is Express Mail.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually, I believe, have the lowest priced overnight delivery of all the major companies.
But that's still quite a bit of money. It's
exactly.
Certainly a lot more than the price of a stamp where you could put it on there and if you needed it there, maybe next day, but at least within 2-3 days.
It might be cheaper just to drive it to wherever you wanted to go.
There you go.
If you really had to get it there.
Yeah. Do you think this whole thing can be reversed, and if so, how? What can people who are concerned about this out there, listeners, what can they do?
Of course, we need their support. We need their support. We need for them to contact their congressmen, their senators, either by mail, email, telephone. The written word is always the best. When we are talking about things in the public, for them to support us, if they want to come out and picket with us, if we're going to be doing some picketing, informational picketing, that's always good, too. We know we have a lot of friends. A lot of our customers are really good friends of ours.
And again, the Postal Workers Union does have a boycott against Staples right now because of Staples taking on so many of the postal services, and that's supported by the large teachers union. Where can people go if they want to get more information about any of these issues?
You can go online to apwu.org. That's our national website. You can get most of the information from that, but if you call our local offices, we'll talk to you as long as you want to talk to you about not shopping at Staples. Yeah. And that number is 619-283-5600. It's a pretty easy telephone number to remember.
A couple of last questions. I know that everybody I've talked to was really shocked to find out that overnight service just got eliminated and nobody even seems to know about it. Why have we not heard more in the media about this? Why has the president maybe not used his bully pulpit or his position to speak out on this issue? Why does it seem to be such a sleeper issue?
And that's a good question, Miriam. To be perfectly honest with you, we've been very disappointed in the president in that regard. I mean, here as of late, a couple of 2-3 weeks ago before Congress went on recess, the president had an opportunity to stop or put a moratorium at least on what has transpired since January the 5th, was there's been a reduction in service standards. If the president would have vetoed that, that wouldn't have taken place. As a result of him not doing anything, here we are. Postal services and their standards are going to be reduced. Customers will be affected. And this is the people's postal service. Okay, let's be clear. The Postal Service belongs to the people, okay? Not to the big mailers, not to the politicians. It belongs to the people. And the people need to be aware of what's going on, because once it's gone, it's gone. And if it goes private and postal rates increase, they're going to be asking what happened. So we need everyone's support in this challenge.
It's interesting. In some ways, it seems to be going backward historically. We did a little research, and we found out that the Postal Service first postmaster was our founding father, Benjamin Franklin. Before he came along, before we had a Postal Service, mail in colonial America took weeks, sometimes even months. You couldn't get mail from one town to another or from overseas. If mail was delivered, it typically came to an inn in each town, and people then had to ride into town from those outlying rural areas to get their mail. And then Franklin came along and improved all of that and really put us on the start toward the modern post office that we have today. Tom, what do you think Benjamin Franklin would say if he knew what was happening to the Postal Service today?
Well, that old adage, you'd roll over in his grave. I think we've talked a little bit about that, Miriam, that I think the best thing in the world would be for myself or somebody to dress up like Benjamin Franklin and walk out from behind the counter at one of our post offices where people have to stand in line for a half an hour because there's only the Postal Service management only staffs that post office with one person, where they should have two or three during that time. And we see that all the time. So I think it would be really a good idea to have old Ben come out from behind the counter line and welcome everybody and start selling some stamps, too.
There you go. I have a sense we might see that coming soon.
Maybe
on some public service announcements.
Maybe so.
Well, I want to thank both of you gentlemen very much for joining us here today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice in Descanso.
Well, I thank you, Eddie, and I really thank you for including us and making your listeners and your readers from the East County Magazine aware of what's going on. And we'd be welcome, more than glad to be able to come back anytime you ask us.
Well, we certainly welcome you back anytime there's some new developments. We want to stay on top of this and be sure that our listeners are informed.
Thank you.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Mental health care workers are marching in protest outside of the Kaiser Permanente's Medical Center on Zion Avenue in San Diego this week, claiming Kaiser's rules are unfair to them and their patients. It's part of a statewide strike at 65 locations statewide, the largest walkout of mental health workers ever in the United States. Union officials claim they are understaffed and have had to delay their patients' visits, often taking up to 2 months for an appointment, a lag they believe puts health and lives at risk. A longtime therapist at Kaiser, Jim Clifford, says, "It's really unethical for us as healthcare professionals to be having to practice that way," KPBS reports. This isn't the first time Kaiser has faced such accusations. In 2013, Kaiser was fined over $4 million by the state for forcing mental health patients to wait unreasonable amount of time between appointments. Protesters claim that with lack of staff, this issue has not improved. The protest includes roughly 2,600 mental health workers statewide who are members of the National Union of Healthcare Workers. The union is currently attempting to renegotiate the terms of its contract with Kaiser. Roger Daugherty, a spokesperson for Kaiser, claims, "This has not impacted our mental health services for emergency and urgent care whatsoever." Daugherty also claims that the mental health care system is operating appropriately. He contends that appointments may be weeks out due to patients' preference or scheduling availability. Daugherty accused union members of raising the issue to try and get a better contract. He says, "In our estimation, it's a bargaining tool they're using," according to UT San Diego. Many protesters say they are genuinely concerned about the patient's well-being, however. They argue that it is important to schedule appointments close to each other so that the patients can make real progress. Robin Sales, another therapist at Kaiser, says she is concerned about delays in patient appointments. "We are really worried about people committing suicide," she says, UT San Diego reports. Both sides have indicated that negotiations between Kaiser and the union are continuing. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Hayden Parsley.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This week's Destination East County has events ranging from an art show at Mission Trails Regional Park to a pipe organ concert in La Mesa. Plus, we'll have a preview of coming attractions, including a ballet folklorio dance production in Lemon Grove to a circus coming to El Cajon. So stay tuned for all these events and much, much more from East County Magazine.
Mission Trails Regional Park is displaying works of 7 award-winning artists in one show. The works, created in a variety of mediums, are on display now through January 30th in the Visitor Center Art Gallery. For details, visit mtrp.org.
A Martin Luther King Jr. birthday concert will be held on Saturday, January 17th at 5 p.m. on Lemon Grove's Main Street Promenade at 3443 Main Street in Lemon Grove. The concert is a special feature of the Lemon Grove Live Concert Series and will feature the Martin Luther King Jr. Community Choir of San Diego Ensemble members. Admission is free.
The legendary British rock band Herman's Hermits and its original band leader Peter Noon will be performing 2 concerts on January 17th at Sequan's Live and Up Close Theater in El Cajon. Showtimes are at 6:30 and 8 p.m. Noon's classic hits include I'm Into Something Good, Mrs. Brown, You've Got a Lovely Daughter, I'm Henry VIII, I Am, and Can't You Hear My Heartbeat. Herman's Hermits sold over 60 million recordings, including 14 single hits and 7 albums that went gold. For concert tickets and details, visit sequan.com.
Nature and landscape photographers Ernie and Katie Cowan will lead a Cactus and Canyons photo tour to explore some of the most scenic and secret places of Anza Borrego Desert State Park on Saturday, January 17th. This all-day hike runs from 8:30 a.m. to 7 p.m. The tour is designed for photographers to enhance your techniques and transform landscape photography into works of art, not just snapshots. You'll visit narrow and winding slot canyons to learn proper exposure, lens selection, composition in the morning, then visit other part locations in the afternoon with a lunch stop at a local restaurant in Borrego Springs. The tour is open to all skill levels. For more details and tickets, visit theabf.org.
Mission Trails Regional Park offers free concerts in the Visitor Center on Sundays at 3 p.m. The next performance will be by the Santee Community Chorus on January 18th. Now for a preview of coming attractions.
A candle-making class for teens and tweens will be held at the Alpine Library on January 22nd at 3:30 p.m. The next day, January 23rd at 3:30 p.m., a candle-making class for adults will also be offered to help you light up your life.
Felix Cavalier's Rascals are coming to the Poway Center for the Performing Arts Foundation on Saturday, January 24th at 8 p.m. Felix Cavalier is best known as the keyboardist and lead singer of the 1960s group's Young Rascals, king of blue-eyed soul and later pop and jazz fusion. The group later became the Rascals. Hits included Groovin', Good Lovin', A Beautiful Morning, and more. The tickets and details you can visit powayarts.org.
A 90-year-old pipe organ has been restored at La Mesa Central Congregational Church at 8360 Lemon Avenue in La Mesa, which will host a concert to celebrate completion of the restoration on Sunday, January 25th at 3 p.m. The concert will feature classical and sacred works by Bach, Mendelssohn, Franck, and Wieder, performed by Robert Plimpton, resident organist at First United Methodist in San Diego. Plimpton has also performed weekly concerts at Spreckle's Pipe Organ in Balboa Park and has played with local orchestras, as well as teaching at San Diego State University.
Circus Vargas will bring its newest big top tent circus performance, Arlequin, to the parking lot at Parkway Plaza Shopping Center in El Cajon from February 5th through 9th. The circus features an array of dazzling performers, including aerialists, acrobats, clowns, and more. For tickets and details, visit circusvargas.com.
Florio, a dance theater musical production by the Ballet Folklorio in Aztlán, will be presented on February 8th at 2 p.m. in the Muerte Dance Studio, which is located in Lemon Grove. The show features the indigenous dancing and costumes of Mexico. For information, visit muevictestudio.com.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at www.eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
This is a public service announcement from East County Magazine. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts provide important information about much more than wildfires. In these winter months, you can receive free alerts via email or Twitter on your mobile phone about emergencies such as flash floods, road closures, heavy snow, and other severe weather alerts, as well as wildfires, traffic reports, and more. You can sign up for this free public service at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Indians.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.